RSN 927 Summer Breakfast.
Very good morning to you, John Hastings. Welcome back.
Morning, Maisie. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be back.
Pressure's on today.
Two from two.
You knew what I was
talking
about.
I want to be on the promo again, Maisie, so we need to find a winner in the early mail.
You still are. That's the depressing.
Yes.
Oh, you're not? No, we had a winner yesterday.
Oh,
Bryce has knocked you off.
No.
Finally.
Oh, no.
Oh,
so. No, don't worry. I'll find one this morning.
Jeez, if you
been on recently.
If you win today... And you get your voice on the promo. And poor old Bryce almost, only lasts one day. He'll be shattered when he comes back tomorrow.
That would be absolutely brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yes.
I will try and find one early.
We will. Fingers crossed. Our tea hasn't been on fire. How long does a drive take you to get in? And what time does the alarm go off?
The alarm was 4:15 this morning.
Yep.
It's not too bad.
Do you find there are stranger people on the road and out in the streets at 4 a.m.?
Yes,
other times of the
I find that. I'll tell you what I did see this morning on the way in. It was about 10 past five. The rowers, they're already up and at them.
Oh, yeah.
I could not believe it.
No, they're nuts.
It was ridiculous.
They are crazy. I remember rowing at school, and the rowers, you know, I'd be hard pressed to get up before 8 o'clock for an 8:30 start.
Yeah.
And the rowers, the school kids who were rowing, they were up and about and at 'em, yeah. And they'd already rowed 4 kilometres somewhere,
yeah.
And
then
rocking up to class.
Straight into school, yeah. It's a different breed, that.
Nah. Swimmers are the
That's
same.
Not for me.
Swimmers are the same. They will have been in the pool at about 5 o'clock this morning for another couple of hours.
That's proper discipline, isn't it?
I know.
We just, I've been a cricketer for many years. I'd just rock up at 9:30 for a 10 a.m. session.
You blokes, you cricketers, you are shocking for sleepers.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. We don't start until normally 11 o'clock during daylight saving hours. So, you know, just have a little bit of a sleep in. And
this was pre-Big Bash,
get up and
too,
go
yeah.
out for breakfast, a little strong flat white, and just get ready for it all, and away we go.
When you're travelling around the world, do they still have the same breakfast in every hotel and all that sort of stuff that you can get?
Well, it's normally better. It's normally just the buffet. If you're in a sort of, say, Sri Lanka or an Indian series or something like that, just omelettes. That's all.
Omelets.
By the end of it, you just would be happy never to see another omelette. Just omelette with a lot, no chilies, thanks.
And there's curry for breakfast if you want.
Yep, there's all sorts of buffet style sort of breakfast. It's a wonderful thing.
My in-laws went to India for a wedding, one of the traditional Indian weddings, and there were stacks of, I think about 5.5 million people turned up to the wedding. It went for about 25 days.
Yes.
They're incredible celebrations.
Yeah, they are.
But we are, both my families are big curry eaters. We love Indian food.
Well,
they would have been happy not to see them.
Yeah, that's the
breakfast
thing.
Lunch and dinner.
I've been to India 16 times now, I think it is, and I love my curry as well, don't worry about that. But when you go over there, it's hot or hotter, so if you don't like spicy food, it's not a good place to be trying to eat a curry. That's
there's
for sure.
What's the famous, there's a curry, it's Brick Lane, isn't it, in London, where a lot of the good curry restaurants
are. That is
correct. I
remember
going there with a few friends, and my friend was Sri Lankan.
Yep.
He claims that Sri Lankan food is a lot hotter than Indian food. So he goes, oh, don't worry about this.
I've got this.
I'll get the hottest on the menu. I reckon the waiter took our order, maybe overheard our conversation. I had a vindaloo, which are fairly spicy.
Yeah.
And he went hotter than that.
Oh.
And
sweat?
Sweat.
Oh.
This was in London too, and it was about -5 degrees. It was sweating, got the shakes, had the yogurt. You know, you're pouring the yogurt.
Yes.
It's like in Dumb and Dumber where they slam the
refill of yogurt.
So, no, it was not a good day for TJ, but he recovered. And, there we go, Sri Lankan v Indian curry. Who knew?
Mm.
But I reckon the waiter overheard. Our conversation might have tipped off the chef. Just make this one as hot as you can.
A stitch up.
Oh, he almost died, I think. Now, I was only asking about driving in because, Prince Philip's driver in a car crash, 107. She was driving at 107.
What?
Now, my grandpa, he won't be listening because he lives in Sydney.
107?
He's 90. Jeez, he shouldn't be driving.
Oh.
He only drives down to local shops.
Yeah, I started to get nervous. My nan started to tick over 85. I was like, well, that could be enough, I think.
It's a bit of a threshold.
But there's a lot of good elder drivers out there. But
there are.
107.
Well, she said, so she flipped the car. Imagine driving past the scene of that crime and there's a car on its roof A little 107-year-old lady. It's going,
just wanders
what's
out.
What's going on here? No, so she's given it up.
Dear, I will quite rightly so, I would have thought.
This is the scary thing about driving into work so early. And a lot of people who are listening now will get the same type of people on the road. You don't really know who anyone is.
No.
And everyone you look around, you're going, what are you doing up so early?
Yeah, what are you doing up so early? Why are you driving so fast?
Yes.
That's what I noticed. Coming in on the East Link and then the Monash.
Yep.
So quick. I fly by.
I got a new car the other day, and it's got the lane assist.
Oh, yeah, that's very good.
You know, not that you want a 4 hours sleep at the wheel. But
wandering off and kicks you back into gear. That's
exactly
handy, but you don't want to rely on it.
No. So I thought I'd give it a test on the freeway. And coming in, it just sort of drifted in out of the lane, and then the steering wheel magically
just
turns itself
straight back in.
How does a car recognise paint on the road?
I've got no idea, but it's extraordinary, that technology.
So anyway, it drifted me back on, and I was being an absolute smartass with no hands on the wheel. And then it flashed on the dashboard, put your hands on the steering wheel. I'm
like, it's got cameras as well.
Now my car is telling me how to drive. So, no, it's incredible technology. I've never driven a car.
Yeah.
A new one before anyway, so that was unbelievable. Yeah, that was good fun. Did you see, so Big Bash last night, I was having a laugh. You saw me looking at my computer before.
Yeah.
I was having a laugh last night in the Big Bash. So just a couple of the results if you're just joining us on this Wednesday morning. If you want to get involved too, 0416 90 50 52, or give us a call, 1300 652 927. Text us in if you saw the bat flip last night on the Big Bash. So good news for the Renegades. They were able to secure the victory, but unfortunately there were some serious injuries at the start of the game. Have a listen, courtesy of Channel 7 last night, what happened at the toss.
Give it a nice old hoist, and Finchie, it's your call.
Roofs.
Oh, gee whiz.
And it's flat. Good toss.
We've just taken out about 14 photographers and a light tower over here. Sonia, I'm not sure we had insurance for that, but well done.
Oh, gee whiz. Aaron Finch.
Andy Mark was very funny.
We've taken out 14 photographers and a light tower.
The poor old lady who's got the bat flip, I don't think she realised you're supposed to sort of throw it up in the air rather than out.
It's just slipped forward, rolled forward of the finger. She had a bit on it, so it's gone miles forward, just catapulted forward.
Oh, no.
And when you have when you do the toss, Maisie, they have, there is literally 14 photographers there. There's two video cameras there, and everyone would have been waiting just to get the shot to go nice and upwards and just drop down on the pitch and bang. Oh, gee whiz.
Oh, gee whiz. That's amazing. Have another listen to it. Andy Maher, who was sensational here. Take a listen. The gee whiz is the best.
Give it a nice old hoist, and Finchie, it's your call.
Roofs.
Gee whiz.
And it's flat. Good toss.
We've just taken out about 14 photographers and a light tower over here. Sonia, I'm not sure we had insurance for that, but well done.
That gee whiz.
Oh, gee whiz.
Gee whiz.
Oh, that is gold. That is absolutely brilliant.
That was doing the rounds on Twitter last night as well afterwards.
If you haven't seen it,
well done to Channel 7, who actually, Channel 7, normally TV stations want to bury those type of moments, but Channel 7 have actually cut it. So check out their Twitter or Instagram. We'll actually retweet it on the RSN Breakfast Club Twitter as well, at RSN Breakfast. That was a very funny start. And the best bit for the next 3 minutes, they had to try and hold it together.
Big grin.
He's bowled first.
He must have been rattled by that toss,
because
the stats are heavily bat first there out of spotless. So what was he thinking? He must have just gone, I don't know what I'm thinking.
We've got to try and get him on in the next couple of days, Shane Watson, and just say, were you actually genuinely rattled by the bat flip? So after all that, now this is an interesting point of contention. If that was backyard cricket, so I had the roof of my carport to the right, and if there was any interference whatsoever.
That's a re-toss.
Reflip.
I would have been going, no, hang on, reflip. Especially if it worked out all right for Finchie and the Renegades. But, it's definite reflip, that.
Yeah.
That's some of the funniest.
We used to call it interference.
Yeah.
Into. Flip again. So, no, there was no reflip. Watto won the toss, elected to bowl, and they got They got done.
They got done. Only by 12 runs, but yeah that's an interesting one. I would have loved to have heard his thoughts after that. Just why he would have thought to bowl first.
But. So for 3 minutes, they had to try and hold it together, and Andy Marr's doing this serious interview, and Finchie looked like he was going to wet his pants.
Had the big Cheshire Cat grin on his face.
Yeah, one of those moments where you're just like, he could burst into laughter at any time and just fall over. It was very funny stuff last night to start the Big Bash.
And dear me.
They didn't make a huge total on that wicket either, the Renegades. I think 157, so...
It's a really good sign for the Renegades that they have not played their best cricket at all, in my opinion, but they're still up there, second on the ladder, and they're managing to win games of cricket. They've now got Aaron Finch back. He's in form. So and Cameron White played a really important knock last night as well.
Gee, Harry Gurney can bowl a bit too.
He can, and that's why they got him. I think he was just his first couple of games. He actually did okay, but he hadn't been doing too much in the winter. And I was just like, well, how's he going to go here, Harry Gurney? But he's a quality death bowler, and that's what they got him for.
Michael Vaughan did suggest he might have done some of his best works in the pubs. Yeah, that's right.
He owns a couple of establishments.
Does
Harry Gurney? Yeah, he owns a couple of pubs with Stuart Broad.
Right.
So I can't. One of them. I can't remember what one of them's called. I think it's like.
Are they
might have been Cricketer's Arms or something like that. They're just the standard. But there's another one that's got a bit of an unusual cricket connotation. So.
Right. Are they in London or are they scattered all around?
I think they're up near where they are in Notts, in Nottingham.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. But it's interesting because that's exactly what they got him for, Harry Gurney. But I just thought he might have just been hadn't have been bowling too much. I don't think.
And we're heading towards the business end of the Australian Open. Craig Gabriel has been with us every morning, and he joins us again this morning on RSN 927. Craig, good morning.
Gentlemen, morning.
Finish line is in sight for you.
Yes. I think.
Nearly there. It's been a long time.
It's a total blur.
I was actually reflecting with a few people on the tournament last night who aren't avid tennis goers, but they do enjoy watching the tennis come this time of year. And they reckon they've watched more tennis this year than the last three or four Australian Opens. They think it's been a fantastic tournament just from a neutral tuning in, a casual tennis lover. Mm-hmm. How have you seen the tournament as a whole so far?
It's been a very good tournament, but that's nice to hear. I don't think we've had the incredible matches that we might have hoped for or to compare with the ones we had last year. Because last year, I believe, we had an unbelievable run of memorable matches. In fact, three of them, I couldn't decide which I would name as my match of the year. And all of them involved Simona Halep, as it turned out. This year, I would easily say that the Williams-Halep match was the best one of the tournament, this year.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm seeing it.
I think it's a bit of a change in the guard in terms of there's some young guys doing some really good things now. You see, obviously, Federer's out. Halep's out, but Serena's still there. Djokovic and Nadal are still there, but it just seems to me like there's some seriously good young talent around.
Yeah, on both sides, on the international side and on the Australian side, because we had so many young players and lesser name players moving through that have garnered attention, like Alexei Popirin.
Yeah.
Alex Bolt, the story behind him. So that has really ignited people's interest, and obviously Ash Barty being our only player to get through to the second week. So, and then, some of the lesser international names causing some damage and going through, and for people over here, Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yep.
Yeah.
And his personality.
Yeah,
that's got people in. He's so fantastic.
Yeah, well, and that's what tennis needs from this next generation, that personality. And I think everyone's connected with Stefanos Tsitsipas, especially with our Greek connection here in Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also wonder if it's also for TV purposes, if it's a case of a change is as good as a holiday.
Yep.
A new broadcaster in, I think there's been a fresher approach on how to promote and push the matches and having breakfast TV on site every single day.
That has been a really good
move. I think they've done a marvellous job.
Yeah,
haven't they? I've enjoyed the seamless transition straight into it.
And that's the thing. It's on. So when you turn it on in the morning, you flick channel 9 on this morning, it's present.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You wake up and it's on. So yeah. I think that's been a really good move.
I had the TV on the entire night.
Yeah.
I sleep with the TV on.
Do you?
Yeah, initially it was a security measure in hotels.
Yeah. I understand that.
Now I am totally used to it. Even at home, the TV is on. I sleep right through it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yes. A bit of light. And I'm gone. I need total darkness. But then I can sleep through anything.
Yeah.
So once it's dark,
I have been known to sleep standing up.
It's an incredible effort. Lucky you're sitting down there. We'll talk about the Davis Cup team too, with a bit of news about that last night. Press release came through about 10 PM naming the Davis Cup team for the Aussies' next tie, to be led by Alex Dimonor, but some interesting omissions. We'll get to that in just a tick. But let's start with Ash Barty, the big news from last night. Her dream unfortunately ended last night at Petra Kvitova, but I think, speaking of winning the hearts and personality, she did exactly that, with letting us in a little bit on what she's been through over the last couple of years, and that emotion with Jim Courier in the post-match interview on court was really something for all to see, and you knew what it's taken for her to get back from that shocking home invasion a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a lovely person. She's got, when her eyes smile all the time. Mm. And yes, the determination and the drive that she has, and that horrible, horrible incident. And by the way, they still haven't caught the guy.
Haven't they?
No, they still haven't caught the guy. You know, it was remarkable. I know her a bit. I know her PR person really well. And, you know, Katie would tell stories about how much she went through and, you know, to get back to what she's come back to with and done, boy, that's incredible strength.
Mm, mentally, more than anything, really. I mean, I know that...
I mean, she still hasn't got 100% movement in her left hand.
Yep.
Still managed to do it.
Which is amazing to think.
It's extraordinary to have it taken away from you like that as an athlete in those circumstances and to come back like she has... It's remarkable.
No, it's a fantastic story. And hopefully she does well in the next round as well. First time since 2014 she's back into the semifinals. Of a major. So great news for Petra Kvitova. On the other side of the net, Ash Barty, who we all speak of falling in love with. We've done that over the last couple of weeks. She's really let us in on her journey. She's so down to earth. What does her 2019 look like now? And do you think she might change her goals? Do you reckon players come into the Australian Open just to see where they're at the start of the season and then, say, her and Tsitsipas, who's probably outperformed what he expected, do they change their goals for the season?
I'm sure they'll make adjustments, but you know what? Tsitsipas said his aim was to reach the semifinals of the major. So somebody said, well, was that where you wanted to stop? No. You know, but that's a stepping stone. That's a start.
Yeah.
So I guess he's going to have to change things. But with Ash in particular, I don't know if she actually publicly sets goals. She's so laid back and so down to earth and goes with the flow that as things happen, the results are there and she'll keep pushing for them, keep trying, keep working hard to improve and keep getting the runs on the board. That... I think she'll just as it comes, as it happens. She's that type of person.
Yeah.
Obviously, getting into the top 10 has always been one of her ambitions, and going all the way at a major is another ambition. But that's really also for any player at this level. As far as top 10 is concerned, she's right there, knocking on the door. I think Monday she'll be 13. Had she won, she would have slipped into the top 10.
Yep. And so when can she sort of make a move into that top 10 over the next couple of months?
Yep.
Do you expect her to be inside the top 10 by mid-year?
Oh, yeah, I do. Hmm. I genuinely do. And I wouldn't be surprised if she gets a few really good results through the American hardcourt season. I'm sure she's going to be playing in the Middle East next month or this Fed Cup as well, she may even do it by April.
Another one of the good stories, and there's a few emerging at the Australian Open. Danielle Collins, the last five Grand Slams.
Energy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about energy.
Incredible.
Woo.
So the last five Grand Slams, or last five majors, she's been in, she's exited at the first round.
First round.
Yeah.
Incredibly, she finds herself in the semi-final after beating another unseeded player, Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, in three sets, but she demolished her in the last set, whopped her off the court, and she's into a semi-final as an unseeded player. What a great story, Craig.
Yes, it is a good story. I didn't think I thought it was a toss-up yesterday, but if I had to pick one, I was going for Pavlyuchenkova because of more experience. I actually sat down with Danielle Collins last night for the USTA and did a short video piece with her. And I said, are you shocked and are you surprised at what you've achieved? And I think it was her manager who said, not yet. And I said, are you shocked and surprised that you've got to this stage and there's still some more? And that opened it up for her. And she said, yes. And she's just living it at the moment. Her first Australian Open, and it is quite an achievement to reach the semifinals.
Yeah.
And I asked her how she's felt and has she tried Australian foods and has she tried Vegemite and all this. So she said, Yeah. It's a bit strong. She said, you know, she's been here on the been in Australia since Brisbane tournament and all that. She said, "Oh, a friend of mine and I, we went and had Indian food. We're hooked on Indian food now. Right. Not quite Australian food."
She's had to come all the way to Australia. And
I was about to say, no, wait till you get to London.
Yeah, that's where it's
at. We were talking about Brick Lane a little earlier on the show. Yes. Now, the quarterfinals, rather, to come today, Naomi Osaka plays Elena Svitolina. That's a heavyweight clash, both seeds inside the top six. So who are you expecting to come away there with the win? Obviously, Osaka's got a big game, but Svitolina's been pretty good throughout this tournament.
Svitolina's serve is a bit of a puddle. You know, there's not much there. So I would go with Osaka. By the way, on the live, what we term the live rankings, Kvitova has moved to number one.
Right.
Now, but there are still three other women in contention, and those three are Pliskova, Osaka, Svitolina. So Svitolina, whoever loses that Osaka-Svitolina match is pretty much out of the running.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go with probably give Osaka the edge in this one.
All right. Yeah. That taking place in the morning sessions to be followed by Serena Williams and Karolina Pliskova. Will Serena just get through here?
Yes. Yep.
Done. There we go.
You don't really need to say too much more about that, do you?
No.
She's unbelievable.
Yeah, Serena she is. Williams.
Incredible
she
woman.
How oh, long do you think incredible. She can keep going for, Serena? Because she plans her calendar now.
Yeah.
I was talking to a few people yesterday. She's like the under 15s playing against the under 9s. Yeah. She just goes, oh, I'll train for a couple of months before each major.
I think it was a coach came out and said, you know, 10 minutes after the winning the French, it's all I'd wanted to do, and then bang, she's on to the next one. Right, now I've got to turn my attention.
She doesn't dwell on the wins or, you know, you think players are going to rejoice big time and all
celebrate,
that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's just get on with it. It's like Ash last night. I thought, so Australian. She's so Australian. She's, you know, somebody said about going on with it and, you know, feeling bad about it. No, you know, we need to celebrate what we've achieved. She said, yeah, we'll go back later, celebrate, open up a beer. So,
quite right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's her. But as far as Serena is concerned, no, she's just too awesome for words.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she'll romp through.
Through to another semi-final then after today's action. Yesterday, on the men's side of things, early in the day, we saw Stefanos Tsitsipas win in four sets, 7-5, 4-6, 6-4, 7-6. Interesting, this one didn't go to five, but Djokovic probably wanted it to in the end because he'd back his fitness in. But Tsitsipas, he's putting together a very good tournament.
Very, very good tournament. Just back for one second on the women's.
Yep.
Osaka Williams win, fair square off in the semis, US Open final repeat.
Yes.
It looms large.
That's a night match on Rod Laver Arena?
Pencil it in.
Who would you schedule for the umpire there?
Carlos Ramos. the other Australian, Tom Sweeney, who was in a controversial situation the other day. It'll be interesting. But what a tournament Stefanos has put together. It really is a remarkable event, and that was another superb performance against Roberto. But I'm just wondering, what is Roberto doing? I mean, what is he taking? Seriously, the way he's been performing and grinding through, just like Kei Nishikori, really. But that went, could have actually gone to the down to the fifth set. It was very close to doing so, but Stefanos was nice. It was nice to see him get through.
He now plays Rafael Nadal, which is going to be a mouth-watering prospect. Yeah. And it's sort of that classic style where Tsitsipas will use the net a lot against the heavy topspin of Nadal, who last night accounted for Francis Tiafoe, another one of the good stories from this tournament, in straight set, 6-3, 6-4, 6-2. Rafa beat Tsitsipas in a semi. It's pretty exciting stuff.
We're going to see more of that happening.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to see more of that happening. And look, Tsitsipas beat Roger here. He's beaten Novak before. Now, can he do it with Rafa? And I think also he is so relaxed about it all, he could very well do it. And you know, the questions that have been coming to Rafa the last couple of 2-3 days or whatever is, you know, how are you preparing for these matches? And these young players are coming up. And do you have a different mindset going in against the young, next gen, a lot of players? Obviously, Tsitsipas being one of them. He won the next gen finals over Alex Dimino in Milan late last year. And his comment was, no. Why? You know, they are another player. And I will prepare the way I prepare for the other players. So he doesn't distinguish between the age.
Very good accent.
That's a very good impersonation. Yeah. Yeah. As well.
So that's how he sees it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's logical, really.
Well, he became the youngest man in ATP history last year to defeat 4 top 10 players in a row at the age of just 19, halfway through last year. So he can get it done against those top players.
Yeah, I love everything about Stefano. So I just think he's
absolutely,
even his YouTube channel, the stuff he's doing, his photography away from the game, and just what he brings, his energy. It's amazing to see.
He meshed well with Jim Courier in the on court. And I love the way he promoted his YouTube channel, telling people to go and subscribe to it. By the time he got to his post-match, the subscribers had doubled.
Smart play. So he'd be hoping for another on-court interview. Yeah, he'd be like, right, that's my motivation. Get more followers.
A couple of men's fixtures to come today. Milos Raonic will play Lucas Pouille, and Novak Djokovic will play Kei Nishikori. In terms of those results, which way do you see those going? Can Raonic continue his good run? He likes Australia.
Yeah, I think it'll be a Djokovic-Raonic semi-final.
Is there any question marks over Djokovic's fitness? I know he's just been a bit sore. I mean, this stage in the tournament, you would be feeling a little bit sore, but he's going okay.
No, I think he's been. Yeah. I think he's fine.
He spoke in the paper as well this morning about enjoying that set tiebreak, knowing that that's on the horizon if it does get to that. Yeah. So, but he's one of the fittest players.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Some interesting comments in The Age today from Novak Djokovic. And then I wanted to talk about the Davis Cup team. Yeah. I did mention it a little while ago. It was named sneaky little 10:30 p.m. release last night. I thought that would have come out earlier. Isn't it a chance, surely, to promote people who are in the Davis Cup team? So John Melbourne, Jordan Thompson, John Pearce and Alexi Popram will join Alex Dimonor. I reckon it would have been fantastic to see them all. I don't know if they're still at Melbourne Park, but all together and make a group announcement.
You know, normally they have done that, but this is what was strange, because I read about it. I'd forgotten that the announcement was coming out yesterday. I read about it online during the day.
So did I.
And then the release comes out at night, and I'm thinking, like, is this release just sort of missed the internet or what? But the story was out hours before the actual official release announcement was put out. So I couldn't figure that one out.
The story was more about Nick Kyrgios missing, and that's where the angle was. Yeah. But then we didn't know who was in the team.
Weeks ago I said that was going to be the case.
Yeah.
That he was not going to be there, that it would be Alex Dimonor, it would be John Millman, it would be John Pearce. And I mean, I think Hewitt was going to play doubles, And I think with a bit of all this controversy, I think he's stepped back.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
With that announcement too, were you surprised that... Because logically, I would think, from a tennis point of view, for us to get to know these tennis players more, which surely is beneficial mm-hmm. for Tennis Australia, that they would have made a group announcement and done a full press conference, and we would have been able to ask all of them questions yeah. and celebrate their achievements. Yeah, Jordan Thompson's right. had a really good couple of months. John Millman's last year has been fantastic. Alex Diminol, well, we all know his star is rising all the time. And Alexei Popyrin has been fantastic.
I don't disagree with you. I just wonder if they've already gone to Adelaide. I don't know where they are.
Adelaide then.
Well, yeah, I don't know where they are. Yeah. You know, I haven't seen any of them around.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was that or because of all the controversy, if they had done that, all the questions were going to go to Hewitt about the negative aspects, about Thanasi, about Matt Ebden, because he had a few things to say about Nick, about Bernie. So I think the idea, the thinking behind it is just let's put the release out. That's it.
Yeah. We'll wait to see how that plays out over the next couple of weeks. Good to note Alex Bolt is also part of the squad. He's not going to be part of the team, but he'll
travel over. And he's losing
the
top deck hairdo.
Is he?
Yeah, he said he's probably going to change it.
Good.
Yeah, that's good. We like to see that.
I wonder if you'll go to the shaved head now and just get the number one out. Yeah, you get that rinse out of your hair. That'll take a while.
Take a bit of effort. I can't really talk that well.
No, I'm amazing. I'm losing that ability too. It's slowly going.
Don't look at me.
You're lush up top. You're fine. Footy is starting to roll around pretty soon. It'll be here before we know it. We've touched base with a few of the clubs so far. And this morning, time to head down to Princes Park, where David Cunningham is part of a young Blues outfit trying to improve in 2019. David, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been in the system a little while now. You made your debut back in 2016. What's the biggest difference between this preseason and your first a few years ago?
Well, we've got a new high-performance manager in Andrew Russell. So the training's changed up a fair bit from previous years. His probably philosophy is quality, so we might not be training for as long as previous years, but the sort of break times and rest times have decreased. So it's all about backing up and making sure that quality is really good.
Have you enjoyed that more than past pre-seasons?
Yeah, I think I have. Like, in the past, we've probably been out on the track for 3 hours, but with a lot of break in between drills. But it's really free-flowing now, just backing it up. And we're starting to get into more map simulation, which is a good change from, you know, the drills and running that we had to do pre-Christmas.
Now, David... you mentioned the high-performance manager, Andrew Russell. He's had a bit of work to do. He came with a clean bill of health, and I think the whole list was basically not injured. And then, unfortunately, we've had a few big injuries over the last couple of weeks with, obviously, Sam Doherty before Christmas and then Mitch McGovern and his back injury. What has it done for the group and the confidence? Does it rock you at all? Because I know, especially after Doherty did his knee, there must have been at least a few hours where the group might have been shaken up.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really unfortunate injury. He did 12 months of rehab and he was really diligent with that. Unfortunately, like, that was sort of a collision injury that couldn't be avoided, and same with Jared Pickett and also with McGovern as well. So it's not any specific thing we're doing at training. It's we've been pretty good with any soft tissue injury that might have come about by the workload we're doing, but unfortunately that's just a part of the game. So but you know, Mitch is going to be back in training in a couple of weeks, so we're looking for him to integrate back into the main group.
How is Sam Doherty going, mate? I know he's so important for the Carlton Footy Club, and just the way after he's had that another setback, and it would be absolutely shattering for him, but he was there and he had the knee brace on, he was still giving off handballs. So how important is he for the Carlton Footy Club?
Yeah, well, he was obviously shattered, but he's a pretty positive guy and he's gone through a lot in his life. I'm sure he'll attack his rehab as hard as he did last time, and he'll be back hopefully by before the season finishes. He's an important player, but you know we've got enough depth in our back half to cover him.
Well, my co-host here, David, is a big Blues fan, and he was just saying how much he's signed up his young son Oliver as well. Give us an insight into the vibe down at the club at the moment, and you know, I suppose your vision for the year.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment it's just about training hard, but look, obviously we've got to improve on last year, 2 wins, but we're confident that the training we're doing will set us up really well. We think with the added additions of the players we've brought in, it's obviously going to bolster our forwards, mids and backs, and also the young blokes that have come through the drafts. While she's very, very solid player, he's a great runner. So he'll add to that midfield. So basically we know we've got a lot of work to do, but we're pretty positive about the work we've done so far.
Cohen DeCourt is part of the Trek Cycling team who'll be taking to the Jayco Herald Sun Tour Down Under in a week's time. Can't wait for that event to get under the way. Always a great feature on the Australian cycling calendar. He joins us this morning on RSN 927. Cohen, good morning, and thanks for your time on RSN 927.
Hello, good morning.
How's your summer of cycling shaping up after climbing up Wollung Hill and the Tour Down Under last week?
So far, so good, really. Of course, with Richie Porte, we had pressure to perform on Wollunga Hill because he's won the 5 years before that. But, we're very happy that he made it 6 in a row to Wollunga Hill. So, we're very happy with how it went in Tour Down Under. And, really looking forward to what's left in our Australian calendar.
Obviously, it's the feature climb of the Tour Down Under, and we know about it before the race begins, and we know that's where a lot of the race can be won and lost, and Richie's got such a good record on the hill. How much planning as a team do you have to do for that stage?
Of course we all know, apart from one rider who was here for the first time, we all knew that climb, so we kind of knew what we could expect, but of course as a team we need to make sure that Richie starts at the bottom of that last time up the climb in the perfect position without losing any energy. So it's really a team effort to make sure that we kind of baby him around the whole day, keep him out of the wind, keep him in the front, give him bottles, all that sort of stuff for him to be able to really launch on that last time.
I've always been interested. How do you go about it after the race? Does he come up and say, thanks, guys, and get around you guys? Because you guys do a lot of work for people like that, don't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really is a team effort on a day like that. And also the days previous, he also finished second on the overall, so we had to make sure he didn't lose any time on any of the other days either. So he thanks us every day. And then on the last day, he took us out for ice cream, and that was fun of him to do.
There you go.
There you go. That's all right, then.
What's your flavour of ice cream? What's your favourite flavour?
The first time I tried it, it was in Adelaide. I tried a macadamia nut flavour, and that was really good.
Yes, yeah, underrated macadamia nuts.
I'm a big fan of the macadamia nut myself, Maisie. As I said, I'm just blown out a bit since I finished. And Cohen, I just wanted to ask you about, I'm a big fan of cycling and watched the Tour de France over a number of years, and you're a very experienced rider. Can you give our listeners a bit of an insight into, you know, I suppose, right now, you're going through and you're doing a bit of a summer of cycling, but how much preparation and planning and how do you get your body right for the Tour de France and the rest of the European summer?
Yeah, it definitely takes a very long road in preparation for a race like that.
Yeah.
Tour Down Under is the first race of the season for all of us. I did do a couple of races already, a couple of like small criterium stuff like the bait crits and races like that. But that is all training before this. But in the build up towards Tour de France, I have like an altitude camp. I do a couple of big stage races, and really everything gets dialed in for the tour. It's very strict diet for months and training every day, like in the gym, on the bike. It's a very long day's training and then very limited food in general, just to make sure it's as light, as lean as possible to start at the Tour de France.
Cohen de Court has joined us from Trek Cycling, the JK Herald Sun Tour, to start next Wednesday on January 30. So we're a week out from the race now, Cohen. What are your preparations like? What do you do over the next week?
So right now we are in Torquay with the team. So we'll be racing Cadell's race, the Cadell Evans Great Ocean Road Race, I think it's called, on Sunday. And before that, we'll just be training. So today we've got a long training plan. We'll go in the direction of the Great Ocean Run and ride about 5 to 6 hours. We've got 170 kilometers, I would think.
Yep.
So today is the last big ride before also the Herald Sun Tour, because after this race, we'll pull down to Phillip Island with the team again and do the final preparations there, probably look at the circuit a little bit and make sure that we are ready to race there.
Play to start up there in Brisbane. It should be fantastic. And to talk a little bit more about the Pink Bull, someone we've caught up with a few times over the last couple of years, he joins us again from Kookaburra. Shannon Gill is on the line. Shannon, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us, guys.
Now, just wanted to ask, has there been any changes from last year's edition of the Pink Ball to this year's?
Look, the changes are pretty minimal. The main thing that we've done, and it won't change the way the ball plays from what we can see on TV or at the match, but there's a little bit of a tweak in the production, which we think will help the resilience. And then to go through the sort of the layperson's explanation of what it is, when leather comes in to make a ball, it's in a raw form, and we smooth it out, and that ends up being the leather is smoother when the ball is produced. Now, and John would probably could talk from first-hand experience on this, is that when the first versions of the pink ball were out there, the pink finish that goes on the ball, some of it peeled off occasionally. Now, what we are doing now, which is, again, and I stress, it's a pretty small tweak, is that we are just not smoothing the pink leather as much as we would with a red ball, which helps the adhesion, we think, of that pink finish on the ball, so there's less of a risk of peeling of the pink finish.
So, Shannon, and as you said, at the start, I think, you know, that lacquer really came off and it was quite dark underneath and it was hard to see. But you guys have gone away and you've changed and you've taken feedback from all the players. So you're doing a really, really good job. What stage of the ball is it at? So, you know, after the first stage, the second stage, how many times have you sort of retweaked it or tried to modify it to get it better?
Well, if you go right back to the start, I mean, we're probably on stage 25 of the pink ball, but in real terms, we're probably at about since it's been out there in first class and test cricket, we're probably at about the fourth or fifth iteration. But this, the one this year as compared to last year, is not different as far as what you will see, not different as far as how it will play. It's just a resilience thing. The whole point of the pink ball is to make it visible under lights.
Yep.
And the longer we can keep it more visible, that's the key. So this is just another small thing we can do. But when you ask the question, what stage are we at? Mm. Well, it's a little bit of how long is a piece of string, because the whole intention is we need to evolve and continue to improve the ball. Now, what that improvement means for the next 3 years, who knows? At this point, these are the things we test, and we test lots of things and we try lots of things just in with the intention that, okay, let's look at this thing that could make it better, and then we test it, and if it does, okay, we bring it into production of a ball.
Yeah, it's an amazing setup out there, Maisie, out at Kookaburra and Moorabbin and Cheltenham. It's extraordinary. The lengths that they go to actually test the ball and make the ball, there's people hand sewing, there's machines sewing up balls. It's Can you give our listeners a little bit of an insight, Shan, into that
the factory
and the wind tunnel that you've got, and how many times it just rotates and bangs up against the glass wall?
And I know we've done the tour a couple of times, mate, so we know what it's all like. I think sometimes there's perception that we stick a bit of leather into the back of a machine,
and out comes a cricket ball. It's
not as simple as that at all. We have a lot of machines through the factory, but we're talking 50 or 60 people are crafting and hand working on bits of the ball that make up the end product that's used in a test match. So it is a really involved process. We have a laboratory which we have a chemist in there who's there full time working on all sorts of tests. I mean, every batch of leather we test for fat content, salt content, tensile strength, lots of things that go way over my head, but they are things that effectively are safeguards to make sure that the quality of the leather and the quality of the ball remains consistent throughout.
On the Ash Barty loss last night, she had a fantastic tournament, 6-1, 6-4, bundled out. That's what you got to say, Hasto, the tennis terminology.
Bundled out. You've been doing a good job, too.
I actually haven't said bundled out the entire tournament, which I promised myself I wouldn't. But she lost last night, 6-1, 6-4, in straight sets to Petra Kvitova. And to tell us about that and Ash Barty's progression in 2019, it's great to welcome back to the show Peter Johnston, Australian tennis legend, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Pete.
Hi, Maisie. Hi, John.
Now, we just wanted to touch base with you, just to assess, about 2 weeks ago you were on the show and you told us that Ash Barty was a really good chance of going deep. Did you expect her to make the quarterfinal stage? And then once she was there, she had plenty of momentum. Did you expect her to beat Kvitova last night, or is that a pretty fair result?
It was interesting. First of all, I wouldn't call it a bundle, because I think bundle sort of when you go early.
True.
And she got to the quarters, so I think that's a late bundle. But I think, look, I mean, Ash, it was very open, this whole Australian Open, and you had to put her in there as one of the leading contenders on the back of she was now a regular top 20, and at the end of last year won the WTA Elite Trophy in Zhuhai, which was for the girls in the top 20. So, you know, her form has certainly let her be part of that conversation. And then I think what she's done in Australia so far sort of kept her in that as well. I mean, she played well at Hopman and then final of Sydney. So, and then lost really tight match to Kvitova, who, and there was the repeat. Now, as far as how she was going to go last night, it was one of those ones where I felt a bit unsure, because Kvitova does like to stamp her mark early on in a match. She's very much trying to always jump on the serve early and insert, you know, her presence on any rally early on. And I think that was always going to be the key. And when Kvitova got off to a really good start, I think Ash was always playing catch up. And then, you know, Kvitova is also a great front runner. And I think as a result of the win too, she's now the provisional number one, depending on what happens. So it was always going to be a really tough ask for Ash, but boy, I think she can hold her head higher after this summer.
She's done an amazing job. I think she looks extremely fit. She's enjoying herself, which is great to see. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, Pete, is just being a young player on tour and just the social media pressures, growing up in the spotlight. We saw Ash just take a break and go do something else. How hard is it for some of these young players that are just having to just grow up on the road, I guess?
Well, I think it's hard for all the players in an individual sport, John. You know, it's hard in a team sport too, but you really have to be able to learn to cope with the week-in, week-out grind. And, you know, I think one of the best things, which is proving to have been the case, is Ash having some time out and playing the cricket, and then probably assessing, well, what am I really missing, you know, and assessing whether she was going to enjoy that coming back, because she knew what the experience was like and had chosen to leave it. I think now she's back, she's not taking anything for granted. She's embracing, she's not looking at it as pressure at home. She's looking at it as embracing the the fans, who are certainly, embracing her. And I think that helps you if you've got all of these things in balance and in context, and the social media side, as you say, it's going to lead to a good performance on the court. And I feel like that's exactly sums where she's up at the moment, because she came in as a, everyone was expecting to have a good summer. She did have a great summer and has come out of it looking like she's enjoyed every minute of it.
Where do you expect her to get by, say, halfway through the year and then by the end of the year?
I guess getting her ranking up this in the last 12 months always means you have to defend those points. So there's certain times of the year when you've got a lot of pressure because you're defending and, you've got to, make similar results just to keep your ranking. But what I do feel for her is I really look forward to the French and Wimbledon time of the year. I think Wimbledon can be, and the grass court season can be potentially outstanding for her, because the style of game she plays is so well suited to the grass. And, she's just got that beautiful backhand which can come over it or under it, and great volleys, likes to approach. And I think she's just going to play grass court tennis so much better than nearly all of the other girls. So you'd think the next 6 months are all going to be, providing she stays fit and healthy, are all going to be really positive. I'm sure she's coming into this year now with a full head of steam and actually believes that she can beat anyone in the world. So you'd think it's going to be a great year.
First test of the two-test series against Sri Lanka is starting tomorrow up in Brisbane. Looking forward to the pink ball test. And one man who might receive a baggy green for the very first time is Curtis Patterson. And one man who's had a lot to do with his development over the last couple of years is Phil Jakes, the coach of New South Wales, who joins us on the show this morning. Phil, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Give us a bit of an insight into Curtis Patterson and what makes him tick. Maybe first of all, away from cricket, to learn a little bit more about the man himself. What was your impression of him when you first came across him?
Yeah, well, the first time I sort of came across him, he was an 18-year-old kid coming in basically to make his debut for New South Wales. He made 150 on the poo. He showed that he was made of the right stuff to play at the top level, and he seemed a very self-assured, confident young man, who sort of, matured even further, I think, over the last few years. He's obviously played quite a lot of first-class cricket already at a young age, and, and he's been a really consistent performer for New South Wales. And, he's a really fine young man. He's our vice-captain of New South Wales. We think highly of him there, and, I think he's got a really big future in the game.
Jakesy, I've really rated Curtis Patterson over a number of years now, but give our listeners a bit of an insight into what we can expect about his game in the Test arena.
Yeah, Curtis is a big, tall left-hander, very elegant player, lots and lots of time, very good, patient cricketer, and nothing really seems to fluster him. He's one of those sort of guys that are very level-headed. And I think he'll really revel in the big occasion. He's obviously gone out in the game at in Tasmania with a point to prove, and in the CR11 against Sri Lanka, and he's gone out and made two really big hundreds and hasn't got out. So I mean, there's no bigger statement than that. So I think he thinks he's ready in himself. I really hope he gets an opportunity to go show everyone the type of player he is.
Yeah.
After the debacle a couple of years ago down in Hobart, there was a bit of a 50-50 choice. Mark Waugh has spoken about this between Nick Maddison and Curtis Patterson to be a part of the lineup. Do you think he's better suited to make his debut now than, say, perhaps a couple of years ago? And what has he learnt in that time since he was almost named in the Test team 24 months ago?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure. I wasn't around New South Wales when that all happened, but, I know that he felt he was close, and I know that people in New South Wales cricket thought he was pretty close at the time as well. And obviously Nick got the nod in that game, and it was sort of unfortunate for Curtis at that point in time. But I think 2 years, to actually think about what it takes to be an international player will be really good for Curtis going forward. I think he's still only 25 years old. He's, which is still a young man for a
for Test cricket, and you know, but he's now got 7 years' experience of playing first class cricket. He's sort of been on that fringes. He's seen a bit of the expectation that can go with playing for Australia, and I think that's half the battle when you're playing international cricket, is dealing with that expectation. And yeah, the 2 years that he's had to kind of process that, put some runs on the board, be consistent, learn how to make really big hundreds, I think it's been a good thing.